What is up, Jabroniacs? This special edition of Cow, a Monday sesh, is brought to you by our Patreon, patreon.com/comediansofwrestling. Go over there to support the podcast, and more importantly, join the Cow community. You get access for a couple bucks, $2 to be exact, a month. You get access to our Discord server where you can interact with all the listeners of this podcast. Mark the F out. You get access to our weekly bonus episodes. You get access to watch a pay-per-view with us in the Cow Zoom Thunderdome, where we watch a pay-per-view together virtually over Zoom, safely, social distanced. Well, not safe from, you know, Tulo's bad behavior, but that's a topic for another time. But yeah, right now we're in the middle of our Patreon push. We're trying to get 20 patrons that we're going to change the art of the podcast, send out a sticker to every single patron based on our new art, and we'll bring back the Cow Movie Club, which are episodes for patrons where we watch movies with pro wrestlers in them and dissect them to an unhealthy degree. So if you listen to this podcast, just know we make this podcast independently. We produce it ourselves. We're not under the umbrella of any kind of big corporation who's going to tell us what to do. We do it ourselves. So support the pod. Join the community. Cheers up. Enjoy Robert. We have an awesome conversation. Lime, duh. All right. I am sitting here with fellow Jew Mark, Mr. Robert Karpeles. What's up, man?
Karpeles. We just went through this in the 5 seconds in.
Dude, I just went through it in my head, and I was like, I said Karpeles, and then I was like, Karpeles. No, it can't be Karpeles. That sounds like the made-up way. But you told me everybody gets your name wrong, right?
Everyone gets it wrong. Everyone thinks it's Karpeles. It's like it's the least Jewy sounding Jew name. Everyone just thinks I'm Greek.
Oh, man.
So I just go with it.
I love it. I like I started off by calling you a Jew. It's, you know, it's a weird move. It's a weird move, but it's what I did.
It's,
you know?
But it's what we do.
It's what
it's
we
like
do.
We can sense each other. It's like I'm a Jew born in Long Island. You're a Jew from New York. It's all the same.
Oh, yeah. I'll always play this, you know. You know. On the show, everybody. Because Robert, before you came on the show, you told me, you're like, hold on one sec, and then you walked off screen. I kind of heard you knock on. There was a knock on the door, and then you bashed your head into the wall. I see you're bleeding a little on your forehead, and then you walked out, military style, Goldberg style.
My Jewish wrestling savior is Barry Horowitz. That was our guy. Like, yeah. We didn't ever think we were going to get a Goldberg. I was just happy that there was one dude on TV that I'm like, that guy had a bar mitzvah, and I don't care that he never is going to win a match. That's the guy I'm backing.
Yeah, but Goldberg's the kind of Jew. He's going to have his bar mitzvah at, like, 55 or 60. Well, I guess that's, like, next year. like, he'll be like, he'll have a late one because he's trying, you know, he's at towards the end of his life. He's trying to figure it out. Anyway, dude, I'm excited to have you on the pod for a session I'm calling the Monday sessions, where I just mark out. We don't got to be topical. We go wherever we go talking about wrestling. So we met doing Total F and Marks. So you're on the podcast Total F and Marks, which has some exciting announcements. Let's just get that out here.
Yeah, let's break this here. We're rebranding the show. Total F and Marks was started by comedian Dan St. Germain. It's him, Scott Chaplin, Mike Lawrence, who are all incredibly talented comedians. And then I'm like the schmuck fourth guy that's on there who lucked out into the show. And we were talking about rebranding the show, because when it first started, it was Total F and Marks. It was Dan and another guy just as wrestling fans talking about wrestling. And then we kind of looked at it, and all four of us have certain degree of comedy background. Mike won Roast Battle for Comedy Central. Mike and Dan have worked on the Celebrity Roast. We're rebranding the show as Wrestle Roasts. So we're going to keep our same general format. We do a 10-count format talking about all the different shit going on in wrestling. But we're going to pick a different wrestler every week, and we're gonna roast them.
And I love that.
It's going to be a lot of fun. We did a test run last week for our series finale of Total F and Marks. We did Baron Corbin because it was just shooting fish in a barrel. And there's no skill in me. I mean, the joke, you know, hey, Baron Corbin won the Andre the Giant Battle Royal. Like, that's the fucking joke.
Yeah, the joke.
It's gonna be a lot of fun. We're partnering up with Conrad Thompson and his empire of podcasts. And eventually down the road, once the world comes back to normal, we'll be part of StarCast and do a lot of fun stuff with that. So right now it's just getting it off the ground. If you listen to this show, you're going to like our show.
Absolutely.
And if you don't listen to this show, how are you hearing this?
That would be odd. That would be odd. Yeah, we had Saint Germain on a bunch, friend of the show. I love all the comedians related to wrestling. It's why I actually started this pod. I called it Comedians of Wrestling, because I was just sitting in audition rooms, and we'd sit in the waiting room, and I'd just marking out with other guys like Saint Germain so I was like, yeah, let's just have comedians talking wrestling. Anyway, so dude, I noticed you being like, oh, I lucked into it, you know, doing the self-loathing Jew routine. But let's say this for a second. I would like everyone to understand, this man not only he wrote for WWE, you're a writer at WWE,
yep,
and also you run WWE Creative-ish Twitter, which is has a huge, huge following, bro. You deserve to be on that show, man.
You're it's a huge asset. Syndrome. It's like, it's one of those things where it's like, these are trained, these are professional comedians. These, I mean, I paid money to see Mike Lawrence live once. Never Dan, because screw him, but I never came down here. But, you know, I'm a huge fan of comedy, and it's one of those things where I started the Twitter account mainly just to entertain myself.
Right.
Because once you leave WWE, I left WWE to go to law school because that's the next logical step.
Really? Wait, so when did you work there? Because I got to hear all about this. This is where we got to start.
Sure. So I started at WWE. I graduated from college end of 2004, interviewed at WWE beginning of 2005, and was there until August of 2006. And it was one of those things where it was the only place I ever wanted to work growing up as a kid.
Right.
I have no real athletic skill whatsoever, but I'm like, I love wrestling. There's no way in hell I'm going to be a wrestler. I could be Paul Heyman. I could wear a suit and bankrupt my family a couple times over and still come out Teflon. Yeah. But it was one of those things where it just opened up. There was a weird gap between graduating college and when you could apply for law school, which is an incredibly boring story. It doesn't matter. But I had this window of time where it's like, I can't go to law school for a year and a half. I got to do something. Let me shoot my shot and try to work at WWE. The weird thing about WWE, and just because we're going to keep bringing it back to the Jew thing, it's kind of like you're Brendan Fraser in School Ties. Like, you have to hide the fact that you're a wrestling fan, because if they find out you're a wrestling fan, you're done.
So Matt Damon is going to come beat the shit out of you? Or
I probably wouldn't even get Matt Damon to be one of the extras. It's such a weird place to work because it's all self-loathing. I remember once I got heat from... I was in like the warehouse, and I put on SmackDown because it was a Thursday night. I'm like, all right, I'm going to see what's going on. And someone walks by, like, what are you doing? It's like, I'm watching SmackDown. He goes, no, don't let anybody know that you actually watch this shit. I was like, oh, okay. It's a weird world where you're expected to know everything going on with the product. You should, you know the difference between if you're talking to a main eventer versus an opening guy,
right?
But you're really not supposed to know wrestling, but you're supposed to know everything about it.
That's what I never understand. You know what? You just summed up what I actually meant. Was the people who get those jobs? It seems to be a lot of people who get the jobs here. I notice are not marks, and they really are. I'm not making this about myself, but when I interviewed at WWE, I was like, oh, well, I'm a mark. They're going to sniff it on me. Can't hide it. But it's kind of weird to go into that kind of for that job and that be such a negative. You're like, wait, what? What? Like, what a weird nombo, like a non-combo. Like, you think knowing the product, being passionate about the product would be a good thing. Yeah, you have to be able to write. You have to be creative. You can't just be watching the monitors and not doing your job. You know what I mean?
Because they try to take it to this idea of it's narrative storytelling. So anyone that knows how to tell a story can tell a story in wrestling. And as a wrestling fan, you know that's a complete recipe for disaster.
Right.
When someone comes in and they're from outside, there was a guy that was there. It was like my first week there, so I didn't say a word. And he made this pitch where Teddy Long was going to be a vampire. And he was going to turn a bunch of other black wrestlers into vampires. And he was going to build this like stable of black vampires. And he's pitching this idea. And then he was fired the very next day because they're like, what is going on here? Yeah. But that's someone who has no idea of wrestling, where they think, oh, this is an open sandbox. I can come up with whatever I want.
Sure. I would sorry to pivot here, but I'm saying I would argue that like maybe that idea is not good, but should he be fired? Like, don't you want good ideas? Like, why do people got to get fired for a bad idea? You know,
they fire people for any reason whatsoever. If a guy is complaining, he's fired. If he doesn't stand up for himself, he's fired.
Right.
It's a weird it's a weird spot to work. I'm glad that I had the experience, but I got a lot of PTSD about it, for like everybody else does, because you everyone goes into it thinking, I know everything that's wrong with the WWE. I can figure out how to fix this. And you step in there and you realize this is completely impossible to fix.
Yeah.
It's simple. It's all right. Come up with a long-term storyline, follow it through to the end, make sure that the guys that you're putting on TV are talented and can execute it, and just ask for like a little bit of everything to make some level of common sense.
Right.
And you get in there and everyone starts that idea. You put we have a whiteboard with a month's worth of grids where it's all right, here's this week's Raw, SmackDown going to the pay-per-view. And you think you're going to get there, and then it goes off the rails because, you know, Vince was hungry and was angry in a meeting and changed his mind, or he forgot what was going on.
Yeah, it's not fixable with Vince there. It seems to be like everyone I speak to is kind of like there's a similar relationship with SNL that comes, like, you know, I came up in New York improv sketch community. Everyone wanted to be on SNL and everyone's like, why do they hire that person? Like, hire me. I'll go in there and I'll be the hero. And then I'd watch my friends get hired, some of the funniest people in the world, and they get fired so fast. And you're like, wait, what? Like, what? Oh, and then you realize, oh, like, these are institutions that you can go be a cog in and do what you can do within it, but you're not going to be this big catalyst for change that you think in these machines, you know?
No, everybody thinks they can fix it, but then you get in there and you realize it's never going to happen because you're rarely going to get an opportunity to say anything. I remember once there was an email that came out. We were coming up with ideas for some of the lesser talent on the roster just to come up with something. And we got an email from Stephanie that said, everyone needs to focus on how to get John Cena over. I'm like, you have 12 writers total on the staff. There's the crew of six for Raw, six for SmackDown.
Right.
And they want all 12 of us focusing solely on John Cena and ignoring everybody else. And I'm like, well, there's the problem.
Right.
There's interesting stories to be told. And the Attitude Era was so successful because everybody at every level had a hook. They had a story. They had something. And I get so critical when I watch AEW now, where you had Lee Johnson on TV this past week, and we used to do an exercise. Can you explain this guy's character in 10 words or less? I couldn't give you 3 words on who Lee Johnson was.
Oh,
it was guy on TV.
Right.
And we're supposed to care about him because he's on television.
Dude, NXT, I think, is the biggest culprit of that. I feel like NXT is just full of wrestlers who I'm like, okay. Like, I don't know this guy's deal. All right, he seems all right. You know, like, I'm like, what's this guy's name? All right. Like, I don't know. There's not as much character there for me. But yeah, that's a great exercise. Like, explain what this guy's deal is. What's his deal? You know, you already said it. Like, try to make something make sense. That's the thing with wrestling. Like, I find myself on this podcast, like, praising stuff that's not necessarily great, but it made sense. And I'm just so happy that something makes a semblance of sense. You know, I'm like, wow, this thing, like, it went A, B, C. Wow, I like that. And then I'm like, I don't know if I like that. I'm literally just looking at math, you know?
They work so hard to try to outthink the audience.
Right.
But there's nothing wrong with linear logical storytelling.
Right.
You know, you look at, they made, you know, 23 Marvel movies. The Marvel movies didn't suddenly, like, pull the rug out from under you halfway through. And they're like, oh, by the way, Iron Man's really a clone. And you didn't see that coming. Like, no, it's, you know where the story's going and you get to the logical conclusion. You're not trying to book week to week to spark a rating, because that's what winds up undoing them a lot of the
time. Like, when I was in the theater watching Endgame or whatever, you knew that this was the end of the road for a lot of these actors. They're not going to be doing Marvel anymore. So Tony Stark probably going to die. Chris Evans probably going to die. People are still fucking bawling their eyes out because they're vested in the story. You know?
Right. You're telling a logical story. Right. It's not, we got to swerve the audience, because the audience doesn't really care. Like, there's a fan base that will watch the WWE no matter what.
That's me.
And that's me. I have been a wrestling fan for as long as I can physically remember. Like, I was a little kid and I had, like, the Hulk Hogan in the AWA action figure with the white trunks. Like, that was one of the first toys I had as a kid. My parents are not wrestling fans. They thought this was going to be a phase and I was going to grow out of it by the time I was, growing up loving, like, pro wrestling and comic books. The fact that I ever had sex, let alone got married, is a miracle. But being a wrestling fan, you either taper off at some point or you're stuck forever. And I think we are fortunate enough that we're stuck forever in it and can grow and have that trajectory. I don't know how they're hooking young audiences today fully. One of my wife's cousins, he's like 11 years old. He loves wrestling because he watches the YouTube clips of John Cena. So he sees like these little 3-minute snippets. Right. But if I'm like, hey, what do you think of Drew McIntyre? Who's Drew McIntyre? They're not watching. They're not used to sitting down and watching a TV show. Wrestling was appointment TV growing up. If you missed the syndicated show on Saturday morning, you're not getting wrestling for a week.
Right. So, I mean, that's just, right. That's an element of TV. All right. I can go down that road, but I want to know is the PTSD stuff. I want to know what are the stories that really, if you can tell, what are just a couple moments where you were like, I got to get the fuck out of this place.
There's one story that sticks out, and I've told this on my pod. I'll just keep plugging it. Fuck it.
Okay.
I don't care.
A good story is a good story.
We were booking. It was Undertaker and Randy Orton were in a feud, and it was building up to a No Mercy match where it was Undertaker versus Randy and Bob Orton, and we're telling this really interesting story that Randy's messing with Taker. And we're putting doubt of like what's going to happen with Undertaker. And we're at the go home show, and the go home show main event was going to be Randy Orton versus Undertaker 1-on-1. And the idea was that Orton was somehow going to steal a win. And then it's like, well, what's going to happen in this big match at No Mercy? Like we're getting all this heat with Randy.
Right.
The way that TV works is you work Wednesday to Tuesday.
Right.
So Wednesday you get in the office half a day in the afternoon. You start mapping out your show. Thursday, you're writing whatever SmackDown's going to be. Or I was on the SmackDown team, so SmackDown and Raw. You're in your separate offices. You write your script. You're pitching it to Stephanie. Stephanie hears the idea. She gives you her feedback. You rewrite the show. Friday, you pitch it to Vince.
Right.
Everyone sits down at a table. They go through Raw. They go through SmackDown. And the good thing is Stephanie's like the Vince whisperer. So she already heard the show, so she knows what she likes, so she can kind of, no, Dad, this makes sense. We're going forward with this. Or Vince, she always called him Vince. It was never Dad.
I was going to say, she called him Dad?
We had a whole speech. Yeah. She's like, in the office, he's Hunter. At home, he's Paul. I'm like, I get it. Like, we're good. I'm not calling him Paul. I'm not getting my ass kicked. So that's Friday. And then Friday night, you rewrite the show, and then I, as the low man on the totem pole, would have to fax Vince McMahon the entire script one page at a time because he doesn't know how to open an email attachment. So it'd be like 11:30 at night. Everyone else has gone home and I'm loading. I don't know how to use a fax machine, and I'm loading stuff in one page at a time until I get the confirmation. Then Saturday morning, we have to drive to the office to have a conference call with Vince, who's at his home in Greenwich, which is 5 minutes away.
Right.
And we go through the show again.
Right.
So we're as if he's never heard it before, as if he's like an Alzheimer's patient or a young child. Then Sunday, you're flying to TV. You're on Vince's plane, which seems like the coolest thing in the world for about 11 seconds until one, you're not allowed to put a seatbelt on. And there's four captain's chairs couches.
Wait, it's a private jet?
It's a private plane.
And if you're a writer, you're on the plane with him.
We were on the plane with him, so there'd be four captain's chairs. It'd be Vince, Kevin Dunn, Triple H, Stephanie, and then two couches. And I got told the very first one I sat down, someone's like, "If you put a seatbelt on, you're a pussy." I'm like, "All right,
dude, this is the best shit I ever heard.
This is gonna go great." And there's this plane, and then in the back of the plane is a bedroom, but I've never seen Vince sleep. But there's just like a bed, like it's kind of weird.
What kind of plane is this, by the way? Like, I don't know plane model numbers, but like, is this big or small? Like, it has a bed.
It has the bed, and it fit like, 16 people plus the pilot. So it's the one you've seen the picture of, like the corporate jet that has like the WWE logo. Which was like cool for about 11 seconds. I'm like, I'm going to get to be on the corporate jet. And then I'm like, I'm stuck on a plane with these people. And you're like holding on, trying not to slide while the plane is taking off because you don't have a seatbelt. And he immediately is like, all right, let's pull out the scripts and let's go over them again.
Do you wear a seatbelt during takeoff?
No. There's no law. There's no laws on a private plane. Like, he's on his phone while we're taking off. And I'm still like, this is like 05. I'm like, are we going to crash? Like, are we okay? Is this going to interfere with this stuff? Don't worry about
it. I'm sorry. I need these small details. I'm sorry. Go.
I'm here for the minutia more than anything else. So we're going over the script again Sunday. So then we get to TV. You get to TV Monday.
Yeah.
There's the agents meeting where the head writer will sit up there and they'll read they'll go over the script. Now all the agents got this email to them, but do you really think, Fit Finley's opening up an email and reading through the script? No, this is the first time they're hearing
it on the shillelagh.
and you immediately become like the nerds in high school talking to the jocks.
Right.
Because you're trying to like, well, here's what we're trying to tell. We're telling a very nuanced story. Like, they don't give a shit. And we're going through this SmackDown go home show for No Mercy. And we're explaining, okay, here's why Taker, you know, the finish is going to be. And then Pat Patterson, rest in peace, just goes out of nowhere. He's like, I think Taker should go over. And Vince is like, I love it. Great idea. Let's change the show. He's heard this pitch now 3 days in a row and approved the script and knows exactly where we're going for No Mercy.
Right.
And now it's like, all right, we've now, and then we just killed Randy dead at the main event. He loses clean, makes no sense whatsoever. And now you're trying to sell a pay-per-view with it being ice cold. Because Pat was like, doesn't know where you're going. He hasn't seen the grid. He doesn't know we have 3 months of story mapped out. And just is like, I think Taker should take the win tonight.
Right. Like, but and then you're just like, well, why? Because you spent all this time working on this thing, and then it's kind of heartbreaking, honestly, right?
It's rough, right? And it's rough because you have pride in authorship when you do it, and then
it
gets cannibalized. And I realize the way that someone survives there is they just learn how to operate with Vince. And I knew I wasn't there. I knew I wasn't going to be there long term because I got a one-way ticket to law school. And eventually got the opportunity to go transition over to WWE 24/7, which wound up becoming the WWE Network.
Right.
And I'm like, this is a much better opportunity. I don't have to worry about going on the road. I don't have to deal with the agony of like my parents flew up to come visit me. And while we were there, I took them out to dinner because I'm like, I'm a big shot. I have a job. And I get a phone call that I need to figure out a way to rent a motorcycle for Christy Hemme when we're in Memphis. And you need to get it done now. Like, all right, that's the life of a writer. So you're sitting, so I'm sitting there. You don't have, you know, iPhones. So I'm like, all right, I have to go home and go start Googling and find a motorcycle rental place in Memphis, Tennessee.
Oh my God.
Or picking out which donkey JBL can bring out to the ring when we're in Laredo, Texas. As if I'm the donkey expert.
But you're a writer, not a producer. So why would you be doing that?
There's no rules. Because when you say writer, it's writer, producer, grip, everything under the sun. I thought you just write the show, but then you're like, all right, you and Bruce are going to produce this pre-tape. What do you mean I'm producing? Like you're the guy standing behind the camera saying, all right, here's what you're going to say. Here's what you're going to say. Shoot it. And then wait for Vince to see it and hope that he approves it. And that window of time may be anywhere from 5 minutes to 3 hours, depending on Vince's day. And he likes to see everything. The biggest and the most pressure I ever felt in my entire life was Legion of Doom, which was Animal and Heidenreich, the most legendary version of LOD. They're like, all right, they're going to be walking to the ring, which you see it on TV all the time. But they're like, all right, Roberts, your big moment. And they're like, all right, it's going to be an Andre shot, which is the low shot where they look like they're 30 feet tall. And I'm nervous as hell. And I love Animal because he goes, it's like, don't worry, we're not going to make you look like a dick.
Right.
I'm like, thank you. And it happened live. They walked for 10 seconds. It was cut. And it was like, all right, that was the most high pressure moment of my entire life. Cause this was, I mean, it's still live to tape cause it was SmackDown, but it's like, this is live in an arena and you don't want to screw this up.
Yeah. Oh man. It's it never ceases to amaze me. The experiences people have there. Now I've worked in, because WWE jobs are non-union, you know, so I've worked in these situations before. I just worked on a show. It's not out yet. It's a reality show. So I was a writer, you know, producer. I mean, I was doing, you end up doing everything because you don't have, a union where it's, everything's perfectly delineated. It's like illegal for you to do this job, that job. You know what I mean? So so I understand that, but it seems so extreme over there. I want to tell you about my experience.
Oh yeah,
my experience with WWE because one applied. Like I was up for this one job at WWE where it was they wanted me to write sketch comedy for this thing they were doing, you know. But then as time went by, it's turned more into a producer role. I would go like literally, I would have like I maybe had six rounds of interviews. It was like I had like so many calls, and as it kept going on, and then I got to the end, and they're like. It was all a producer job. It turned into a full producer job where I literally was like, I'm not a producer, guys. Like, I'm a comedy writer, you know? So then that job never even materialized. So that's my first experience where I almost got hired by WB. The next time is they came to LA And they're like, we want to interview you. They read my script and they were like, we love your writing. We want to have you come in for an interview. So I come in an interview. They're like, yeah, you got to wear a suit and bring like a paper resume. You know?
Yes. That's I'm a like, weird thing with them with paper resumes.
I'm like, okay. I'm literally wearing a suit. Dude, going into, I never think, I think it's so fucking funny. Like to show up to wrestling, this is the place where, Mark Henry gave birth to a hand, you know, and you're walking in like I'm dressed like I'm going into a fucking accounting interview, you know, it's whatever, but that's how they do it. I get it. And I realized when I went, I came with six ideas for stories, you know, and I knew that they weren't going to ask me about them per se, but I guess I just didn't believe it, you know. And my interview was, dude, they were so nice. It wasn't like anyone was mean or anything. So don't get me wrong. It wasn't mean. But everything they asked me was like I was going to interview to be the manager of Applebee's. It was like, what would your last manager say about you? Like questions like that.
Wow.
You know what I mean? Like, how would you describe your attitude towards work? And then it never talked about like what I'm working on. And then the conversation shifted towards like, are you cool if somebody rewrites all your shit? Do you like working late at night? Can you handle, like, in so many words, nice words, like, how do you feel about getting yelled at all the time? You know what I mean? And then I was like, all right, whatever. I don't know. And then also they were like, did you see Raw? And I was like, yeah, I was at Raw last night. It was in LA. I was like, yeah, I was at Raw, and I was actually, and then they were like, oh, yeah, you saw it, did you see that segment? I was like, yeah, actually, I happened to be backstage for that segment, because I was backstage with my buddy who was doing a segment on the show. He's an actor, and so I was there, and then I was like, oh, man, I just tanked this. It dawned on me. I tanked that interview instantly right there, you know?
I got so lucky because when I went for my interview, because I interviewed first for a writing job, they flew me out. Yeah. I met with this old guy who, or this older guy, I don't know, a total jerk, who wrote for like Beverly Hills 90210.
Right.
And he had like this notebook with like a rubber band around it. And he's talking to me and he doesn't know really anything about wrestling. Yeah. And we're talking, we didn't click at all. Then they brought me back and I interviewed with Ed Koski, who was great. And he's like, have you ever met a legend before? I said, what do you mean? He goes, we're going to bring in Michael P.S. Hayes. Don't get starstruck. And they're just fucking with me because Hayes comes in and whatever. I'm like, all right, you're going to go for your next interview. Like, wait in this conference room. And they did the Lorne Michaels thing where I sat and waited in the conference room for 3 hours. And they bring me in to go meet with Stephanie. And I didn't know I was meeting with Stephanie. So there's like a little part of me that's like, holy shit, I'm just sitting here having a conversation with Stephanie McMahon while trying to be professional and adult.
Yeah.
And the professionalism of the interview lasted for about like 2 minutes before she turned into like the coolest person. And it was this weird thing. We were having a conversation of who had the shittier dorm room in college.
Yeah. And I met Steph once before. She was very cool.
She was very, very cool.
Yeah.
But then when she's running the room, she's an authoritative figure. Like you're
right.
It stops with her. Vince is kind of, when he yells, there's a part of you that's scared and there's a part of you that's like, all right, this is kind of cool. Like the Mr. McMahon character screaming at us, this is kind of awesome.
Dude, if Vince ever yelled at me, I don't think it would affect me the way he wanted.
No.
Like, people are always so, I think I would be like, this is fucking awesome. Like Vince McMahon, you know what I mean?
And that's kind of what winds up happening. It's so stupid. Yeah. And I've been in other jobs where like they're like, your boss is going to yell at you. And I'm like, I've been yelled at by Vince. I think I'm going to be okay.
Right, right, right.
And then like the yelling is like a somewhat stern talking. Like, we're not happy with the group's performance here. I'm like, that's yelling?
Right.
Like Vince would scream until there's like veins and you're kind of like, this is, even if he's going to fire you, at least you're going to get fired by Vince McMahon and he's going to scream, you're fired. And that's kind of cool.
That would be, I know. That's what I'm saying. That's awesome. So I guess what I was saying is it's so interesting to interview for a place like WWE. And I have the credentials to do it, obviously, but I'm not even acknowledging my creative ideas. I'm wearing a suit, which I don't rock suits. And then I also have a wrestling podcast, which I didn't even talk about. You know what I mean? Like, it didn't even come up. Like, it's so odd. It's like, because I'm hiding. You feel like, hide your mark. I understand that from their perspective, because look, Mark Marks. You know what I mean? Like Mark Marks cannot be working there. You know what I mean? Mark Marks cannot be behind the scenes doing that. But like, if you're someone who works in this business and you happen to also like wrestling, I think that's kind of the sweet spot. It's like, right. I've worked with celebrities before. I'm not like, oh my God, you know what I mean? I'm not going to be like, oh, Undertaker.
Right. You don't turn into like the Chris Farley show where it's like, hey, Undertaker, remember when you wrestled Kamala?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Like, no, you know how to behave like a professional, but you should at least respect what you're working on. The problem with WWE is because of where they are in Connecticut, there's so many people who graduated from NYU or graduated from up there, and they just want a job in TV, and they're so self-loathing and hate that they're working on pro wrestling.
Yeah.
Because the only thing in Stanford at the time was there was pro wrestling, Martha Stewart, and then there was like an offshoot of the MLB network, and that was it. So if you couldn't get the MLB job, you were stuck working in pro wrestling, and it was like you were slumming it. And you could always tell the people you're dealing with who have they're disgusted by what they're producing. Like, they'd rather be doing porn than doing WWE and feel more respected.
It's funny because I feel like I'm becoming like, you know, like Mark Maron for years talked about how he met with Lorne Michaels on his podcast.
Yes.
And he was always like, what happened there? I didn't get it. I'm becoming that for WWE. Like, when I'm like, they didn't hire me for a job that I likely would have said no to. I doubt.
Yes.
I wasn't going to move to Stanford. I already was working on a job for Netflix at the time. So there's no chance I was going to take it. But I'm still like, don't reject. This place can't reject me. What the fuck?
It's such a weird thing because I look back now and that was 2006. I'm in 2015. It's like 15 years ago, and I'm still like, part of me is like, boy, I'd love another shot at that. Like, what is wrong with me that I would want to go back in there? And I kind of did because I got sucked back into wrestling a few years ago. So I started the Twitter account in 2010 after I finished up law school, and it was like, I'm sitting here watching Raw.
Yeah.
I can't make these comments to my wife because she just politely puts up with the fact that I'm a wrestling fan. Like, she gets
from
the standpoint of, you know, I understand it's your thing. I love that you love it. I'm not going to get as excited that you are that Daniel Bryan came back after getting fired for choking a guy with a tie. Yeah. Doesn't mean anything to me, but I'm glad you like it. So the Twitter account was just like shouting out into the universe the stuff that I would say if I was backstage at Raw when we're watching the show, or if I'm, you know, talking to myself. And people seemed to respond to it. And that was what was fun, was social media bridges that gap, because I don't know how your wrestling fandom was growing up.
Yeah,
I was the only one of my friends that was a wrestling fan for a long, long time.
Well, I mean, Attitude Era, Attitude Era.
Oh, yeah. Attitude Era is there. I'm talking about like the real post Hogan, new generation era where WWF was tough to watch. And it's like, did you guys see that Duke the Dumpster Drosay match? That was awesome.
See, like, I watched then, and me and my friends were all watched. But for us, it was less about watching. Like, I know a lot of my friends, and it sounds like you were like really following the story at that point. We kind of would like have it on and then wrestle each other, and we'd have like the wrestling buddies, and we'd have our own matches, and wrestling would always kind of be on.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, we had this weird, but we were like all obsessed with it because we would like walk around with the Bret Hart glasses on. Like, we were obsessed, but it wasn't. We were never, even as kids and even as we got older, until Attitude Era, we're not thinking of it in terms of like story or like, you know what I mean? I don't know how to describe it. It was way more about the pageantry of the merch, you know?
Oh, yeah. And that, but that's part of it. That's the nice thing about being a wrestling fan, is there's so many different angles to come at it from, where I couldn't get into sports as a kid as much because I'm like, baseball is kind of boring when compared to SummerSlam.
Right.
And it wasn't until I was older, I'm like, okay, I can appreciate sports in a totally different level.
Right.
And my entire adult professional life until now, I've worked in sports in some capacity, but including wrestling. I'm counting it as a sport because screw it, it's a sport.
Yeah,
but
sure, whatever.
It was something where it was very personal to me, where I'm like, I'm a wrestling fan. Nobody else likes it. And then when the Attitude Era hit, I'm like, so now you guys are all wearing Steve Austin shirts. Like, where were you? You know, you guys don't remember Bret versus Owen. Like,
that's
it's like
a
Mike
Lawrence
thing.
Mike Lawrence is the same way.
And that's why Mike and I both grew up in South Florida. Like, we had that same thing where it's like, oh, the kids that are all wearing DX shirts and NWO. It's like, if I would have told you 5 years earlier I was a wrestling fan, you would have mocked me for being a wrestling fan. But now it's cool, so everybody's in on it.
Yeah. I mean, I would have never mocked you to be for being a wrestling fan. But Attitude Era hit, I was fucking all in. Like, we were maniacs. I mean, we were like lining up all, like sitting out there 24 hours to get tickets. you know, for Nassau Coliseum. Yeah. I remember one that with me and my buddy, we camped out. We set up a tent outside of Nassau Coliseum to wait for the Ticketmaster window to open. And then we got there and we got the meat, you know, the dinner package where you're like, you eat dinner, buffet, and then you meet some wrestlers come out and you sign autographs and then you sit like in the first couple of rows, you know?
That's
and
awesome.
You couldn't buy the tickets online. So we were like, you know, we were crazy. And then I had bronchitis for a week. My mom was so fucking mad at me because it was like, we sat out in the rain. I get those tickets. But that's when that show that I'm specifically talking about is when I touched the Rock. The Rock, Triple H threw the Rock onto the ramp in front of me, onto the grate, like the cage, the fence. Why am I? Oh, fuck. And The Rock was just laying there with his back, and I just ran my hand across his sweaty back. Fucking disgusting. I don't know.
But it's one of those things that, but you remember that shit, and it's like, that was amazing. Like, I went to a house show, and Steve Austin poured beer, and I got beer poured on me, and I'm like, this is the greatest thing ever as a kid, because when you had, when it's again, it's growing up being a comic book fan, it's like, I wasn't going to meet the X-Men or something like that when I was, you know, 10 years old, but you could go physically see Stone Cold Steve Austin and there he is in person. Yeah. And then you kind of meet him and you're like, this is underwhelming. but the worst was we had a paint because Florida never got stuff down here.
Right.
WWF rarely came. It's hard for tour routing to come down to South Florida because the trucks have to, it's a whole lot of extra gas.
Right.
And they were finally holding a pay-per-view here. And my dad's like, all right, I'll go with you because it was an expensive ticket.
Right.
And it was Armageddon 99, which was when the cat took off her top. And part of me is like, this is the coolest thing ever. And part of me is like,
puppies?
I'm here with my, part of me is like, this is awesome. Part of me is like, I'm here with my dad who already is like, all right, I'm tolerating you watching this stuff. And now this is what you were going to take me to see. I'm like, all right.
I know, but it's like, I'm going to show you something I just found. Wait one sec. I'm going to show you. This is worth it.
Just filling the dead air while Dan grabs something.
All right. So I posted some of these on Instagram, but I found this is my disposable camera from a house show I went to. I looked it up. May 10th, 1991. These are pictures from my disposable camera. And this is picture perfect. This was my dad's. My dad had a 1-hour Photoshop he owned. And
that's awesome.
He did this for me and put it in this. And I was obsessed with Ultimate Warrior. I don't know if you'll be able to see these pictures because they're like a little, now they're washed out because of time. So I got to do that. But look at that.
That's Taker.
Taker, Warrior.
Yeah.
Okay. But look, I realized this. So they had an Andre, they had a Royale. I saw Andre wrestle, which I didn't even realize.
Wow.
In 91, bro.
That's pretty incredible.
He must have been close to dead. I mean, right?
Yeah. Well, depending if you ask Hogan was like he was close to death in 87. But by 91, he was winding down.
Right.
Like he was just the guy from the Honeycombs commercials.
Mid-Perfectplex on Kerry Von Erich.
Oh, I was a huge Mr. Perfect fan.
Yeah. So I took these pictures. I was pretty fucking proud of them. But
so how old were you in 91?
I was seven years old.
I'm not gonna try to do the math and when you were born, but
I was born in 84. I'm the same age as WrestleMania's. How about that? Every time I'm at Mania, it's the same age as I am.
All right, so I'm 82, so I'm like right behind you on that. So it's the same it's the same trajectory, same era of growing up with it and then still sticking with it to this day and appreciating it on a different level.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about wrestling, it's like, look, I mean, it has its flaws, you know, but I try to enjoy it. I try to enjoy it. Let's just put it simple. Like, I try to enjoy it. It's frustrating. And I try to enjoy sometimes not liking it. If that makes sense. You know what I mean?
Like,
so, yeah, right, of course you know what that means. It's not even a deep concept for a mark. It's like you have to love this thing that is so frustrating. But, I mean, where are you at? You mentioned AEW. I want to ask you about, like, how you feel about AEW.
So
you seem frustrated by it.
So I got pulled back into wrestling when MLW relaunched. They did an event, Wally Mania, and Court Bauer and Alex Greenfield.
Right.
I worked with them on creative at WWE. And Court's like, hey, we're doing this Wally Mania thing.
Right.
why don't you come out for it? It'd be kind of cool. We'll have you as like a quasi celebrity from the Twitter account. I'm like,
right.
All right. And it was nice. Took my wife. We went to Orlando. It was a quick drive.
Right.
And he's like, look, I'm thinking of bringing back MLW as a one-off like pay-per-view event.
Right.
Like, do you want to come join with you, me and Alex? We'll get the group together. It's going to be real bare bones. And I'm like, sure. And the roster of guys that we worked with on this show were unbelievably talented, but nobody had seen any of them yet. So our main event was Ricochet against Shane Strickland, who's now Isaiah Swerve Scott.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it was great. We had, you know, Jimmy Havoc, and you had Sammy Callahan and Pentagon and Phoenix and all these guys I was getting exposed to. And they're like, we want you to work with this young kid and do some promos with him. His name is Maxwell Friedman. You guys are going to get along great.
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right, I don't know who this guy is. And we meet, he and I immediately hit it off. And he's like, you know, every douchebag like from Long Island. I'm like, yeah. He's like, that's who I'm playing. I'm like, dude, we're in sync.
Fun fact about MJF. He works out at my mom's gym, and I worked out next to him when I was going to visit my parents in Plainview. And I worked out right next to him, and I could feel him being like, this guy knows who I am, and he's following me.
Anyway, 100%.
Yeah.
Like, I love that kid. Like, he's my third son. That's how I always refer to him. Max is – and that was what – that redeemed – my entire time at WWE getting to work with him, because my one claim to fame at WWE, the one idea that I pitched that made it onto TV that was a solidified idea was we were bringing in Ken Kennedy, and I was like, why don't you do the mic drop from the ceiling like at the old MSG, and it'd be a really cool visual.
That's your idea, bro?
I pitched that, and Dusty was like, loved it. And Dusty's like, I think that's a great idea. I'm going to pitch it to Vince, because they knew if I pitched it, it stood no chance.
No.
It's like some kid. Yeah. And it's like, so Dusty pitched it, and Vince is like, I love it. Yeah. And then it wound up being a thing. And I'm like, every time I saw it, I'm like, all right.
That's fucking awesome.
And it was the greatest thing ever.
What a great contribution to wrestling, bro.
That's my contribution. That's my one contribution to the business. And then the reason I hadn't thought about it in a long time, then I found out there was another guy who tried to claim credit for it, and the other writers that were there with me were like, no, that was Robert's idea. Like, fuck off. But getting to work with Max in MLW was so much fun. Like, that was what I lived for getting to do when I was part of it. It was coming up with ideas and creating this character with him and honing it and seeing those chops. So when I watch AEW now, knowing that they have guys that we use like Darby, was there with us and we had Morrison and Hager. They're great. My issue with AEW is they need someone there to bounce ideas off of before it gets on TV.
100%.
The problem is Tony Khan is a very smart guy. He knows wrestling. Like, he's that friend that everyone has that's like, I can tell you what happened on May 1st, 1994 at the WWF house show. Like, it's that kind of guy.
He's like a brain.
That's a polite term for it. Sure, he's a brain.
Right. Yeah.
But it's him, and then it's like the Bucks, who I've seen some of their like Being the Elites. It doesn't connect with me that well. It's like I see it, I'm like, all right, I get what you're doing, but in smaller doses it works.
Yeah.
From a production end, they need someone to sit there and say, all right, last week Marco Stunt was kidnapped. This week Darby Allin was kidnapped. Nobody saw it like the you're doing the same thing 2 weeks in a row with two completely different guys and presenting it as a new story. Doesn't make sense.
They do like five turn off the lights reveals in the same show.
They do the same. They do that. They do the same moves a couple times in a couple different matches. And like, you're taking away your big impact for it. You book Joey Janela and Darby Allin, which we did in MLW. Yeah. And it was a crazy sick match where it was fans bring the weapons. And at one point there was an inflatable shark wrapped in barbed wire. And it was this crazy. And then Janela threw Darby off a balcony into the ring. I'm like, you guys are killing each other for like $200. What are you doing? And then they put him on TV, and they have a wrestling match with, hammerlocks, because your main event was going to be a hardcore match where someone gets hit with a potato. Like, it's weird structuring where AEW could be so much better, but I see that I'm just basically rewatching Nitro.
Yeah, and also the interesting thing is like there's a like people complain about Star Wars because they're like there's force powers are inconsistent, it's like, oh well, when Kenny hit Mox with a microphone, It's like the most scoundrel move possible. 20 out of 10 way to cheat. It's almost the equivalent of he shot him with a gun dead, you know?
Right.
And then stuff happens earlier in the show that's way worse. You know,
and that's part of it. And right. there was a moment this week where I almost texted Max him and Sammy are having a little back and forth, and Max is pretending to record Sammy saying, "I hate Jericho." And Sammy's like, "Are you recording me?" And I'm like, "There's a fucking TV camera. You're on television. Are we supposed to not know that this is being filmed?" But then the next segment, you acknowledge the camera when they're standing there like, "All right, cameraman, go away." It's like, just take a moment and think about it. I love NXT. Yeah. When I watch it, because on our show, we always say, all right, which was better this week, NXT or AEW? NXT is great, but it's like eating your vegetables. It's great, solid matches. It's there's nothing on it that's really going to be bad. It's always very good, but AEW has that car crash feel that Nitro used to have. And as an old school Monday Night War fan, I was like loyal to the WWF, like I owned stock in that company. Yeah. I'm like, I can't believe you guys are watching Nitro.
Me too. I talk about it all the time. I'm like, I that's my, whenever I tell people like, yo, let's not choose sides here. Like, I'm someone who took WCW completely for granted as a kid, you know?
And when I was at WWE, when we had 24/7, we actually had a show, and I wish this show was on the network, and I don't know why, and it was awesome. We did a show called The Monday Night War. Right. And it wasn't a documentary. What we did was we took all 82 weeks of Raw and Nitro and aired them back to back with a bridge of Michael Cole saying, here's what was going on in WWF. Here's what was going on in WCW at this week. And you can compare week to week and see which show was better. So you can be like, all right, WWF was putting like the Blue Brothers on TV, whereas Nitro had, you know, Glacier. So you could see which one was better. Comparing AEW to NXT isn't fair because you're comparing a developmental show that's trying to accomplish something completely different where AEW, they only have 2 hours of TV and they have their entire roster on there. But I feel like guys vanish for no reason for weeks at a time because they just don't have enough time. But yet Peter Avalon gets 20 minutes because like he has pictures of Cody and a goat somewhere and he like owes him a favor. Eddie Kingston was the hottest thing in the company and then he's gone for 4 weeks. Or Lance Archer was a huge monster villain and he's gone for 6 weeks. And you take for granted that your audience doesn't have the same attention span they used to.
Yeah, I think those are really good points. A couple things. First thing you said, I had in my notes like, hey, there's a camera in there saying you recorded me. Is what are we talking about? Like I have this recorded on my DVR. Why does he need this recorded? You know, it's like, it makes no sense. Are we breaking the fourth wall? Are we not? Right. Choose that for your show. Totally agree with that. And then as it comes to NXT versus AEW, the Wednesday Night Wars are not a thing. And I fall into it every single week on the podcast. I'm always, and then I every time correct myself, these are not companies that should be compared. But that's also, you know, NXT's fault for being on at the same time. You can't help but compare the two.
Now, let me put the lawyer hat on for a moment. NXT aired on Wednesdays before AEW did. It just was on the network. And this is a stupid nitpicky thing. I get what you're saying. WWE moved it to USA to pick a fight, which they shouldn't pick. And the worst part of it for NXT, and I'm sorry to cut you off on this, is I feel terrible for the guys in the NXT roster because I know how Vince McMahon operates. And all he thinks is, this is an entire roster of losers because AEW is beating them in the ratings. Therefore, Adam Cole, he's not a star because he can't draw a rating. Finn Balor, he's not a star. Right. And these guys are going, that's why Keith Lee comes up to the main roster and he's immediately, his legs are cut out from under him.
Right. Well, you'd say Keith Lee's legs are cut out. I mean, I think he's doing pretty well up there, no?
He was, and they sent him back to the Performance Center to relearn how to work. But I think that they cut his legs off pretty quickly and they made him just another guy. And now you have to kind of rebuild him. Same thing they did with Riddle. And I love Riddle's presentation on WWE. He's a frustrating guy to work with. We had him in MLW and we were trying to get pre-tapes done and he was hungry. And that was all he could focus on. And we're like, all right, we got to get these, like, there's a lot of stuff we got to do. And he's like, bro, I just want to go to Chili's. And we're like, no, we don't have time for Chili's. Like, we got to get this out. So like, do your promo. It's like, all right, fine. I'm going to fight you anywhere. I'm going to fight you in the ring. I'm going to fight you outside. I'm going to fight you at Chili's. And I'm going to get And I'm like, and at that part, I'm like, all right, that's kind of adorable. But then he just kept going on about what he's going to order at Chili's, and that was his pre-tape. I'm like, all right, fine.
That's hilarious. Okay. In terms of the Wednesday Night Wars, the thing is this, is that when it, there's so many different ways to go here. The AEW show is definitely frustratingly soppy. Like, I couldn't agree more that they need producers in there for every segment. You know, I mean, you could say, you can, we could argue about if they need writers or not. I'd be pro writer, but all bullet pointed. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Every, you know, like not scripts like they get in WWE, you know, which I've seen those scripts. They're like insane, you know,
to give
to a wrestling talent. It's just nuts. But, but I do think that a lot of the promos, a lot of the work is, it feels a little indie over there, you know, like they could use to be
very
like,
indie.
This is TV. For example, I brought up Jungle Boy to Saint Germain and he likes Jungle Boy a lot. So I feel like, you know, when you step on one of somebody's guys, you know what I mean? You're like, yo, I like this guy. Don't, I like Jungle Boy. What were you saying?
I get this every week when I'm talking about AEW with Dan and Scott, who's like the AEW apologist. Like, no matter what they do, it's like, no, it's like, it's really good. I'm like, dude, I don't know. But, you know, Dan loves Jungle Boy, but I want to see.
Well, I like Jungle Boy also, but I'm like, okay, I loved him. I watched him at bar wrestling all the time out here. You know, I live in Los Angeles. He's an L.A. wrestler. I see him at, you know, I would see him wrestle all the time. He's fucking awesome. He'd be like, that's Luke Perry's son. That's fucking cool, you know? My issue is, okay, now you're on TV. And Luchasaurus, I know, he used to do my show at UCB all the time, you know, and he would wrestle. He would come in
good,
the full
he's a
fucking...
good dude.
Great guy. Cannot
I met him when he came off Big Brother. He came to a Florida Panthers game. And all we did was sit there and talk wrestling the whole time.
I cannot. That guy, I have such a deep respect for that dude because he would come to our shows all the time. And he'd be like, yo, I'll wrestle on your show any month because I'm always looking for bookings. We couldn't pay him. We had no ring. Him and Ryan Nemeth would wrestle on the UCB stage. Full matches for us. You know what I mean?
And That's awesome.
It was fucking awesome. You're like, that's so awesome. Because anyway... and then he one time rocked me with a chair so hard. I was like, yo, hit me with the chair. He rocked me. I mean, Black and Blues. It was awesome. I loved it. But, but okay. So now you're dinosaurs. You're a dinosaur. And then you're like a guy from the jungle, right? But then they're like, he's from Valley Village, Los Angeles, which is just like a part of LA. We acknowledge that he's Hollywood, that his dad is Luke Perry, Hollywood Jack. But then he's also the Jungle Boy. And it's like, if I turn that on for my dad, I think a casual fan or someone, and there's a dinosaur, but he also speaks English, and he, you know, it's sloppy. Like, it's a little all over the place. Like, what are we doing for a TV segment?
And the worst part about it with Jungle Boy, and this would be the one edit I would give them, is I like the presentation of the two of them. Marco Stunt serves no purpose whatsoever because all Marco Stunt does is point out that Jungle Boy is supposed to be the small guy of the duo and he's the one in peril. But then you have Marco Stunt, who's like 3.5 feet tall. And I love Marco. We used him in MLW when I was there, and nice guy. But there's no reason for him to be part of that group. He doesn't serve a real purpose. And all he does is highlight that Jungle Boy is not as short as you think he is.
Yeah.
And it's regressive more than anything else. Whereas I think Jungle Boy could be a star if they tailor him the right way. They can't give him a lot of TV time to sit and talk.
Right.
The sit down he did this past week, you're exposing people. You can't expose guys. I think the guy who's been the most exposed in AEW is Miro. I think if the it kills me because if he was still in WWE right now, he'd be main eventing Raw against McIntyre. I think for
Dude,
sure
100%.
They would have given him the shot. Instead, his character is
he
likes
with
video
the tank.
Games. Yes, he peaked
Dude,
with the tank.
You, Robert, you, I love you, man. You're speaking my language. I say it all the time. Your gimmick of I play video games, you're done. You're no longer getting any money from me for merch. That is the lamest thing you could ever do, is be like, I play video games. That's what I do. Now, I get it. He plays video games, and they're making money on Twitch and blah, blah, blah. Maybe in the long run, it makes sense, but... Miro's one of the most frustrating talents I can watch. He never nails a segment, ever. His timing is awful. If they give him a joke, it's like, are you jokey? Are you scary? You don't switch from jokey to scary well. He's so frustrating.
The Kip Sabian wedding was one of those moments where I was like, I should get in a car and drive up to Jacksonville, pull Tony aside and just say, look, buddy, here's how wrestling works. You need to block a segment in advance, work it out earlier in the day, and discuss everything with your talent. Perfect example, you bring in Sinister Minister James Mitchell, where the announcers don't know if they're supposed to acknowledge who he is or ignore who he is, and they're like saying, that minister looks pretty sinister, and there's a pause, and Excalibur goes, it's James Mitchell, and you can just hear Tony and Jim being like, what the fuck, dude? And
Yeah, I
that
mean,
segment,
he said kayfabe 40 times.
and it's like he said the joke once, it was fine, and then he said it a second time, like, this isn't that funny the second time. And yet Kip Sabian, his vows were kind of sincere and babyface when it should have been, I take you, Penelope, because no one in this building could get you because you're too hot for all these losers, but you're from that's heat. Instead, it was, I love you and you are my everything and we should be together. And the crowd was like, yeah, let's go. And then Miro's doing the what is love bit because it got a reaction from 20 people in Jacksonville. I'm like, you're supposed to be the heel so that when Orange Cassidy gets over on you, it's the babyface getting over on heels. Instead, it's guys trying to get themselves over.
It's terrible.
That's the kind of stuff that would never happen in WWE. And it's like there needs to be a middle ground. It doesn't need to be Vince has the iron, grasp on stuff, because when NXT, they let the guys do what they want, like Johnny Gargano on NXT this week with the reposition me in my wheelchair bit.
Dude, that was
Very
so
funny.
good.
My
I thought
favorite
Gargano killed it this week.
He was awesome. My favorite wrestler week in, week out, and I always say I wish I had a roster of this guy, is Cameron Grimes. Is a dude who takes the dumbest creative and makes it work and hits a home run. It's not even just good, it's incredible, and he can deliver in the ring. And I'm just constantly amazed that the pitch is, all right, we're going to do the GameStop millionaire thing, which is the same bit that Jamie Noble did like 15 years earlier. Of, oh, it's a hillbilly who's rich, and he just crushes it.
Beverly Hillbilly,
Yes,
essentially,
it's the
right?
Beverly Hillbillies thing, and everything they give him, he
Kiss my
crushes.
grits.
And Kiss My Grits is now an over catchphrase. I mean, it's not like my whole, but which
Oh, man.
they've already ruined. They brought it back on SmackDown. They had Nia Jax do it. I'm like, you had an organic moment, and you're going to run it into the ground. You're going to run
Obviously,
a hole into the ground.
it's all the same. It's all oh, fuck, why am I blanking on his name? When the dude who fucking slid under the ring.
Titus O'Neil.
Titus O'Neil. Yeah, it's
Yes.
like it's all the world that remember you do that 40 times. Yo, so I just want to talk about Jungle Boy for one more second.
Yeah, no.
So like, because I really like Jungle Boy, and I want to use him as just an example for all of these different things we're discussing, which is like, okay, Cameron Grimes. Cameron Grimes is. His gimmick is like, yo, he's from the bayou or whatever, and he's a piece of trash who wrestles, right? He's like southern trash, whatever, okay? Shortcutting it. And that now his gimmick is he hit gold or whatever, so that's like part of it.
Right. You're doing the 10 words or less exercise. You're doing fine.
But he really is that. That's what his character is, and that's what he is. But Jungle Boy, it's just he wears jungle stuff, but he's Luke Perry's son, right?
And
Okay.
that's what happened though, because he had a gimmick to avoid being my dad was famous and that's who I am. It was and I like and I respect that completely, that he wasn't just going out there, like I'm Dylan McKay Jr. and that's my gimmick. It was I'm gonna
Bro,
blaze
I would
my own
love
path.
that.
I would go crazy for that. I'd love for that
Bro,
shit.
if he came out on a motorcycle, he leaned up against it like his fucking dad. Come on, man.
That'd be awesome. Yeah, but then he'd be stealing Moxley's gimmick because Moxley thinks he's Dylan McKay.
Well, I mean, he's balding a lot more, but
Yeah, but Renee Young's a lot hotter than Kelly. This got really like early 90s nerdy in a hurry, and I'm fine. I'm here for it. Screw it. But because Jim Ross called him Jungle Boy Jack Perry, and the internet got mad at him. So Jim Ross, like, I'm going to do it every week because his name really isn't Jungle Boy. His name is Jack Perry, and he's got a nickname, and that's what I can't, like, doing the Jim Ross voice, I always feel guilty of. But
Well, so now you bring it up. So I'm saying with Jungle Boy, he's got to choose one of those ways to go, and that's fine. It's all good. You can dress like something and not have that be your character. It's just unclear when you also have a dinosaur or I'm also whatever. Whatever. It's a little sloppy. But you bring up my next point, which is announcing, and I'm curious where you're at on who you think are good. Who do you think are the good announcers of wrestling now? And
That's
as
a
of
tough one.
recent,
So that's a
some of
tough
them.
one. So And again,
and you
like
can include Morrow, let's say, even though he's gone.
No,
you know?
I despised Morrow to no end.
I
for
love
a couple
Morrow.
Reasons. I'll get to Morrow in a moment.
Yeah.
And I keep putting over MLW, which I don't work for anywhere. I don't get a paycheck. Fuck him. But yeah. We brought Shivani at him off balls.
Yeah.
And he was so shaky because he's like, the internet hated me.
Right.
All these years, what I did in WC was like, maybe I'm not a good announcer. And then when you just let him go out there and tell the story, he remembered, oh, I'm actually really good at what I do.
Right.
Jim Ross, when he was in the Attitude Era, was the best announcer that there was. Like, that was our voice of wrestling.
Yes.
Jim Ross now is the cranky old man who feels like everything he's saying he's going to get attacked for, and he's on the defensive. Excalibur's kind of grown on me a little bit, but he gets so I don't like him because he gets so super indie. When he's talking about stuff, he's like, these guys did this in PWG. Like, I know PWG is, I get it, but it's like, you know, the Tope Suicida with Cone, whatever, like, great. I think Wade Barrett has been killing it on NXT recently.
I think he's amazing. He's great. I love his work.
I think he's been really good. Samoa Joe has been really, really good.
Samoa Joe is great on the mic always.
He was always great on the mic, but he's good because it's that thing of you're a wrestler, so you're talking from experience, but you're not just trying to put yourself over. It's not like, you know, here's Daniel Bryan. You know, I wrestled Daniel Bryan and I'm better than him, which guys tend to do. Corey Graves has carved out a good character that's gotten more annoying as he's, because you're playing to the audience of Vince.
Right.
And once you're doing that, it's a lost cause, because if you're not, you know, if you're not saying what Vince wants, you're not going to last very long on TV. Tom Phillips is he's a blank slate for Vince, which is why Vince loves him.
Right.
Morrow upset me because for whatever I get that there's this is a very sensitive subject. I'm not going to, you know, belittle his mental health issues.
No, he's bipolar. Yeah, he's very openly bipolar.
But for whatever reason, he took offense to my Twitter account, even though I was saying complimentary things about him. And he started telling people, if you ever at me and include WWE Creative, I will block you. Whereas before, he was following me and was like, thank you so much for saying nice things about me. And I was like, that's kind of like you're working for WWE and Showtime, which another company I work for. Like we have the same bosses. We work the same company. And that's what you're choosing to do with your time, when my goal was not to say anything derogatory to him. But I felt like he was an announcer trying to put himself over and get his catchphrases in a lot, which was frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, I think like there's arguments to make about more a guy like Morrow that like it's too much, you don't like his style, but for me, I'm just like the announcers are also wrestlers to me, you know?
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean that they have to steal focus. Like when Jericho is an announcer, it's like distracting. It's like
I can't deal with Jericho as an announcer. Yeah,
it's too jokey. It's like they did the show, he was announcing this show after Brody Lee died and it was like it was a little weird, I thought. Like
that
I
was
mean,
that was a rough show for me to watch to begin with because I was friends with Brody, but Jericho on there, he's great in small doses. He's not a good 2-hour announcer.
Right. It's a little much.
Yeah.
But he's I appreciate it. Yeah.
I do. And I think to me the best announcer that I always loved listening to was Joey Styles in ECW.
Yeah, he's
because
great.
He could carry the show, he's telling the story, he's treating it like a legitimate sport.
Right.
And he never sunk to certain levels, whereas like Jerry Lawler on commentary a lot of times is nails on a chalkboard. He's very talented, but he plays to his worst instincts, and Vince loves that stuff. And Taz was a really good commentator until Vince would constantly be like, you need to be more like Lawler, you need to, you know, drool over the girls, you need to make corny jokes. And that's not Taz. I love Taz. I love working with Taz.
Yeah,
he scares the shit out of me, but he's awesome.
Yeah.
But that's like he's not the guy who's going to, you know, make jokes about, you know, what the divas are wearing. And but that's what he has to do. And that's why Michael Cole has survived for so long, because he was a newsman. He was a real legitimate broadcaster and he doesn't care. It's like I'm getting my paycheck because the guy who wrote the show says, say this, I will say it. And I don't care if you like it or don't. I'm going to get paid because of it.
I just want to see two things out from the announced teams. Want to see some sort of synergy, like where it's like, hey, like our plan to sell what's going to happen next is not just I'm going to do my thing, you do your thing. I'm going to negate you. We're going to have some kind of plan where one of us looks better than the other one. Some sort of improv, like, you know, yes end of each other,
yes.
if at the least, right? Because I find them negate each other all the time and not in a I'm the heel, you're the face style way. It's just like, I'm going to say my thing that I already planned out, which negates your thing, you know? It's not supporting what the audience already heard, you know? And then, so that's one thing. I'd like some sort of synergy there. Like, I felt like the King and Lawler had the best, like, it's like, oh, what are you talking about? This guy's the best. I love this guy. Like, they did it in the best way. I know Graves tries to do it, but it feels more like Graves does his thing of, like, he, like, ogles the women, and then the other one's like, this guy's nuts. As right. opposed to like, hey, you're right. I'm the more of a grounding this. You
they're
know?
Larry and Balky from Perfect Strangers.
Absolutely. And then the other thing I want is for them to pop properly for what happened. I'm like, It's like if somebody falls off something, like this happens in AEW is the biggest culprit of this in the negative. Like they, something happens that's nuts. And they don't even react. Or something happens that's a reveal, like a wrestler shows up. They're like, oh my God, it's Sting. And then they didn't plan beforehand, clearly. And they're like, I don't want to be the guy who says it and then gets in trouble. So they go, what is that? It can't. Is it? And then someone's like, I guess I'll be the one. And then they go, oh, that's Sting.
They blew that Sting. That's another one. They blew the Sting reveal because the lights went out and the Titantron or whatever they call it turns on, and it says Sting on the screen before Sting walks out.
You gotta
time it. Like it's a television show. It's not a shoot. It's not like you didn't really know Sting was gonna come out, plan it in advance, stop having Sting come out because Sting's another one who he should know better because he's like 91 years old. What is the Sting character in 2021? He comes out as the mysterious guy with snow and then comes out and he's like, Jacksonville, what's up?
I do it all the time on the pod. I go, do I have it? It's like, and he's like,
that's exactly right.
It's a me, Sting. I don't know why I made him Italian, but
it works.
Yeah, but like, right? It's just like, you're like, dude, you cannot have this face paint that's emotionless. You're ominous, right? And then you just come out, like, Darby's nailing the Sting gimmick instead of him. You know what I mean?
Well, because Darby, that's not a gimmick. That's Darby.
That's why I love Darby. I just want to talk about, I know you know Darby. Like, I just want to say what I love about him is like, you know his actual character. You know his backstory with the car accident that he was in. He carries that body bag and it's for his uncle who died in the car with him, right? Drunk driving. And I don't know if that's true or not. Is that true?
I don't, that's that part I don't know about.
Who
that
cares?
One we never just got to. I don't want to ruin your child. I don't want to ruin your boyhood dream here, but yeah, it's true.
Who cares? It doesn't matter. Honestly,
it's a really, shoot dead uncle.
I think it feels too weird to make up, but whatever, it doesn't matter. He has darkness. He never recovered from that. He has trouble expressing himself, so he wears half face paint. He dresses like the goth kid you're going to beat up, and he's small, but he takes punishment so he can overcome you because he is actually surprisingly athletic and resilient. Like, it just, you get it. It's, yeah, right. Boom. It passes the, I got more than 12 words.
Now, let me ask this, because this is going to be the litmus test whether or not we're going to be best friends or not.
Yeah.
What's your take on Cody? That's the appropriate response.
Well, here's my take. I think the only reason I didn't respond is because you put a lot of pressure on it, man, because I want to be your friend, you know? But, you know.
The high bar to clear here.
Yeah, I'm going to text you to be like, yo, great pod. And it's going to be like, did not. Message not delivered. Immediately blocked.
You're blocked.
So I really like Cody. Okay, I really like Cody. I love a lot of the work he did early in AEW, and generally from a macro view, I like a lot. I like what he's doing, and he's had some amazing moments. The match with his brother was, I fucking loved it. Right, it's great. And do I think that there's some stuff I would change about some of the stuff that he does on the show, like how his entrance is like just just makes everyone else look stupid. You know what I mean? Like, compared to the show, like small things like that. Yes, but am I the biggest Cody mark in the world? No. But I really like him. Where are you at?
I could not. If you gave me 1,000 words to explain his character, I would need about 10,000 more after. My whole thing on him is he's a heel who doesn't know he's a heel. And I feel like he thinks he's.
Isn't that something though? It's pretty fucking cool. It is.
But it's not intentional. That's not part intentional. For the longest time, like he thinks he's Triple H and he thinks he's John Cena.
Right.
And he's neither of them because these matches he's having, it's like, it's such an honor to be in the ring with Cody. You know, it's like, I'm going to wrestle Peter Avalon and give him 14 minutes. Because I'm gonna make this guy seem big when instead it just makes Cody seem less than. When he gives his promos, he's talking like he's the most beloved man in the sport when it's not really that established. You're the guy who, you know, you write the show. We get it. Right. We're supposed to like you for that. You have this whole family of jabronis that come out with you, like my boy QT Marshall, who, like, that's another one who, he may have saved Cody from a burning building or something. That's why it's a job for life.
Yeah.
It's like the guy hangs out with nothing but geeks.
Yeah.
He's completely lacks any kind of self-awareness of who he is. And when he's on TV, he'd be so much more compelling as this exact same character as a heel instead of thinking, I'm a beloved babyface and I'm going to be Ric Flair and I can wrestle any kind of match and make it work.
So here's what I would say is that I completely agree with you now. I think when this company was starting, it was important to be like, this is Dusty Rhodes' son. He's starting this. He was a huge indie star at the time. He was in the Bullet Club. He had a really awesome story of starting this company. And so I think selling him as the centerpiece of the company, I think, was important. You know what I mean? And then now they're making him like a star on TNT. They're expanding him into that celeb universe with like the Shaqs and the Snoops. And I got no beef with that because I think you got to do what you got to do. It does reek of WCW.
The Shaq stuff is the dumbest thing they could possibly do.
Well, the booking is so bad. If you
want to, that's my problem with it. Yeah. Because what I've tried to explain is you're getting Shaq. I get it because it's TNT. It's a huge get, and they're doing what WWE never could do, which is get Shaq in a match.
Yeah.
Why is Shaq the heel?
It's Cupcake Cody Rhodes. I mean, I guess, is he even the heel, though? Like, I don't even know. To be honest, that's giving this feud more credit than it deserves.
But that's my point. Like, what this should have been is, and I said all along, this should have been Shaq showed up at TV as Cody's buddy. And then MJF insults him. And now you're doing a match where it's like that way when Shaq's making fun of MJF on NBA, whenever, that works because it's cool. This is Shaq making fun of the guy who's a heel. Instead, it's Shaq belittling your top baby face. And if you're a casual fan tuning in, are you going to root for Cody? No, you're going to root for Shaq because it's cool to see Shaquille O'Neal wrestle. So you're making your guy who's supposed to be one of your top baby faces look like a heel or an idiot. It's a weird dynamic when you could use him a lot differently.
I think that, So listen, I'm not going to defend anything they're doing with that. The only thing I'll say is, like, I get they're trying to get more eyes on the product.
Yeah.
They're expanding into NBA, like getting those NBA viewers. My buddy John Wadowski is like a lapsed wrestling fan. And I always think of, like, when he texts me to be like, yo, what's going on with this? I call it the Wadowski test, meaning like, he's going to text me and be like, yo, when is Shaq wrestling? I want to watch that. And so I always understand bringing those people back in, trying to get ratings. So I'll always get that. In terms of Cody, the character, I think he nailed the beginning. And now I do think now we're in this next phase of him. And you're right. They're not totally recognizing that, like, he's not a huge star, really. Like, he's big within the company, but he's not a crossover talent. So it feels inauthentic to act like he's like Conor McGregor here or whatever. So I think that does feel a little heelish. But I always trust Cody. I feel like he ultimately gets it right. I think most of it,
I think he loves. I think he loves wrestling. I think he respects it. I worked with Dusty. I love Dusty.
Yeah.
Cody getting the neck tattoo was a pure heel move. I'm sorry. If you have a neck tattoo, you're not a white meat baby face.
That blew my mind. It blew. I still look at it and I still go like, what? But like now I like it. You know what I mean?
Now you're used to it.
Yeah. Now I like it. But the problem with that tattoo is that's one of those tattoos where you're like, that's where it starts. Like, there's going to be way more tats. You cannot just have a neck piece that you don't expand. Because when you get sick of having this fucking blotch on your neck, the only way to fix it is by expanding out. So no, he's going to be covered.
I know Randy Orton. I get it.
Yo, where are you at? That's the last thing I want to say to you, because I got to pee.
No, Robert, by the way, the behind the curtain, this is the Saturday before Valentine's Day, and I'm spending my Saturday night not with the wife, but I'm sitting here talking with Dan, talking to you guys. And yeah. And she, look, she gets it. She's like, no, go yeah. and go have fun and enjoy.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'll let you get out of here anyway. No, you got to go anyway.
We've cleared the night.
Listen, Robert, you could just say yeah. I got to go, okay? I understand what you're saying, all right? Listen, last thing I want to ask you is, where are you at on Randy? Now, right. what do you think? So, where are you at on Kurt Randy? You work with the guy?
When I worked with Randy,
yeah,
he was, I'll use the play terms, he was young, he was brash, he was cocky, he was arrogant.
I think it's pretty well documented what he was when you were there.
Yeah. Randy, so Randy Orton, and he doesn't hear what I'm saying. He follows me on Twitter.
Yeah.
He loves the Twitter account.
Yeah.
He's a super cool guy. Like we've gone back and forth for years on Twitter. He'll like stuff that I say that I'm like, dude, you're going to get fired for liking this. Like if I'm burying Brock, he's like, I don't give a shit. Like he doesn't give a shit and he's having fun.
Right.
And I think Randy Orton over the last year and a half has been the best thing on WWE in a lot of ways.
Bro, I 100% agree.
He's having the, because I know when Randy's not having a good time, you can just tell on his face when he's stuck in something that he hates.
Yeah.
And he's having a great time. Even with goofy stuff, he makes it work and he's having fun with it. And I love it for Randy. I mean, I couldn't be happier for him. He's doing what he wants to do. Even the stuff with The Fiend, which is kind of ridiculous and goofy and over the top. Like my dream is that they wind up doing a Firefly Funhouse match at WrestleMania. Right. And at some point, John Cena's there because he's still stuck inside The Fiend from last year.
Oh, my God. I love that.
And he's just like, oh, hey, Randy, you're here now. Cool.
Oh, and then they have a match within The Fiendverse?
Well, I don't know if they can because John's in Canada. Because he's like, you know, so, you know, I want him like on a TV screen somewhere where he's just like, hey, Randy, welcome to the inside of The Fiend.
I had a friend who was writing something for John Cena for a show. And they're writing a joke for somebody to say to John Cena. And they texted me to be like, yo, does this make any sense? They messed me like, does this make sense? Like they run wrestling jokes by me.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yo, why don't you just hire me? If you got a wrestling talent, why not get someone who understands it? No, they're not going to do that.
Because they know, like, you need someone that speaks wrestling to do it. I was reading, there was an article in, like, it was like Wall Street Journal or something. It was talking about the launch of Xbox and what it meant to Microsoft from a corporate end.
Yeah.
And one of the things they started talking about was that they got The Rock for the launch of Xbox for Bill Gates to be on stage with them. And then all their like production people had to start watching wrestling to come up with lines for Bill Gates to say to The Rock that made sense for his character. I just picture like a group of people on at Microsoft watching SmackDown, like, all right, this is what Bill Gates can say, and this is gonna appeal to that audience. And I'm like, you could have found any 18-year-old kid, and he would have told you exactly what to say.
Yeah, I know that. It's always. It's the beauty, it's the curse of wrestling. It's like, it's a little inside, you know? And so it's why when you have Jeremy Piven comes in and he calls it the Summerfest. And like, when you have those moments where you're like, you know, you just don't, you could tell instantly, you don't get it. You hear, but you don't get it.
I just had this conversation today. I mean, I recorded a podcast earlier with David Arquette.
Yeah.
And we watched his documentary on Hulu, which is a great documentary. And in it, there's like all these people shitting on Arquette for being world champion. Like,
he
didn't come anywhere close to ruining WCW. And he was a guy who loved pro wrestling. And I literally said to him, I'm like, unlike Jeremy Piven, who showed up, who clearly had no idea what the hell wrestling was. It's like, I'm going to just use this audience and their WWE is going to whore them out and they're fine with it versus like Bad Bunny.
Yeah,
I love the Bad Bunnies. I don't know who Bad Bunny is. I'm 1,000 years old. I knew him from like a Corona commercial, but I'm like, he clearly loves pro wrestling.
Yeah.
Keep this dude here as long as possible.
Dude, that's exactly. It's like, yo, I don't even give a shit. As long as you actually respect this thing, then fucking you're welcome. Come on. Especially when Raw's 3 hours. We can find some time for Bad Bunny. You know what I mean?
Give him some time and give Damian Priest the rub. Let Miz have fun because I love Miz and Morrison. It's that's how you use a celebrity and it works. Shaq's a wrestling fan. I'm cool with Shaq being there. Yeah. Snoop Dogg, he likes wrestling. You know, he's got Sasha Banks. He's always been around. Anyone that wants to come and be a wrestling fan, like, join the club. Like, it's great. It's
We don't need you. There's enough marks. We don't need you if you don't want to be there.
And the one thing I've learned in corporate life was starting in law school. Everyone has to be like, they put like interesting facts about the students.
Yeah.
And one of the ones during the orientation for the entire law school. And they're like, one of your fellow classmates did this. One of your fellow classmates worked for WWE. And I was like, oh, fuck. And I'm like, that's going to be me for the next 3 years. I'm like the mark. my torts professor, who was a Harvard graduate.
Right.
We're talking after class and he pulls me aside. There's no one. He looks around and he's like, all right, so just between you and I, how much of it's real?
Yeah.
I'm like, you're a fucking law professor who went to Harvard and you're asking me, because everyone's secretly a mark. Everyone at some point in their life watched wrestling in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
And then every legal job I've ever had, if I worked at a firm, I spent 8 years at the Florida Panthers as their in-house counsel.
Oh, awesome.
So between the players, the executives, there's always like, and everyone looks around for us to make sure no one else is like around. All right, the coast is clear. I'm a huge wrestling fan.
Yeah.
Let's talk about it. And like, all right, we're good. Like you speak, you immediately have a shorthand.
It's beautiful.
But you need like a bat signal to be like, no, I'm a wrestling fan. Now you're married. So is your wife a fan at all?
No.
Does she tolerate it or?
I mean, she tolerates it. She likes it. She loves she doesn't get wrestling. I've showed her some stuff where she'll be like, that's cool. She's seen things that's cool. But, the thing she likes more about wrestling is the psychology. That's where we really connect. Is like, I'll be like, hey, this situation you're dealing with in your life reminds me of this situation in wrestling. You know what I mean? And I'll be like, yo, that what they're doing. I mean, I'll be like, it's kayfabe. They don't really feel that way. A lot of times it's business. You know, we're in the Hollywood business. It's like, oh, it's a lot of pageantry. It's a lot of, it's like work. I'm like, you're getting worked, you know? And now she's like, she'll come to me and be like, this happened and you think I'm getting worked? That's where we really connect. But she doesn't like the actual wrestling. She likes that element of it.
And by the way, wrestling carny talk, like when you're in the office of WWE, everyone uses the wrestling terms. So if you're in a business meeting, like, hey, can you kayfabe the door? And I'm like, wait, what? Like, it gets so ingrained in me that when I was working in like other jobs, I would start teaching people to use the word kayfabe.
Yeah.
When I'm like, all right, hey, someone's coming. Like, we can't be talking about this anymore. Just say kayfabe. And it's kayfabe. Like, oh, they love using that word. And it became like this big thing on the legal end. It's like, all right, that means like, shut up what we're talking about because someone else is coming and doesn't know it. Wrestling transcends. But I remember when I told my wife I worked WWE, she's like, that's really cool. I took her to a SmackDown taping, big arena. This is awesome. Then I made the fatal mistake when I was like, hey, I'm going to go see this Ring of Honor show at a high school gym. She's like, oh, that'll be cool. I'll go see that. And then you get that wrestling fan smell. And it's like 200 people in a high school gym. And I'm trying to explain, like, the main event was like, Rollins, like, he was Tyler Black. Then you had Bryan Danielson, Kevin Owens, all these big guys. And she's like, this feels really low rent and weird compared to WWE. Maybe you don't have to take me to these types of shows anymore.
Yeah, I know. You got to go. You got to take people. You got to take to the right thing. Like, I took my wife to a house show at the Forum. And I got free tickets and we were like second row or something. It was fun. And I was like, fuck. I looked around. When we got there, immediately was like, this is a mistake because the house shows does not have the full setup.
No.
And for my wife, that's a huge fucking deal. No pyro, no setup. And so Brock was on the card and Brock was just like suplexing everybody. It was when he was suplexing the whole League of Nations at the time. Remember?
Oh, God.
And he was like suplexing all those guys. And I'm like, oh, this is awesome. And I realized like, oh, she needs the lights. She needs all of it, you know?
You need that to a degree. But, like, I took my wife to a house show, and we were front row because I was working at the arena. It was my WWE hookup. And and she's tolerating it, and it's okay. And then CM Punk came out.
Yeah.
And this was Punk as champion. And I'm not going to be humble. Like, my wife, compared to me, is gorgeous. Like, I outkicked my coverage quite a bit. Yeah. And Punk spent the entire match just hitting on her. And that became the storyline of the whole match. Like, he comes out and he's just pointing at her and pointing at her heart. And she's like, oh. And he's like, "You're with that guy?" And she's like, "Yeah." And she holds up the ring. He's like, it's a cubic zirconia." And then he, like, in the middle of the match, he climbs up to the top turnbuckle, blows her a kiss, and then hits an elbow, comes out middle of the match to pose for a selfie with her. Like, and that
that's
was all
awesome.
It took. And she's like, "This is the greatest thing ever." And I'm like, that's how you hook a non-fan.
That didn't happen. That would have helped. That would have helped.
But that's why I love house shows. And that's why it sucks that they don't happen. Because when you go to those, you get those little weird moments where it becomes real to you. Yeah. And now for the rest of her life, she's going to remember that with CM Punk, or when Ziggler came out, he gave her his shirt.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it was oh, that was so cool. And I love Dolph. Dolph's a good friend
of mine. Yeah.
I know Dolph. He through the Twitter
he's the
account.
Fucking we best.
I've ruined his career twice and we're still friends. When I was first there, I had to work with him and he was the caddy. And they were like, and we got CV and they're like, "What does a caddy wear?" I'm like, "I don't know. We had to go send somebody out to go buy like khaki shorts and a polo." We're like, "You're going to be a caddy." And then I, with the Spirit Squad, not only did I have to work on the Spirit Squad, I had to build their entrance video and create their entrance theme song.
Really?
So I, to this day, I always apologize to Dolph. I'm like, "I've ruined your career twice and you're still there."
And I mean, dude, you didn't ruin his career at all. He's probably one of the highest paid guys on the whole roster.
he's got the dream career for a lot of guys. It's like you settle in, people are like, "Oh, he needs to be pushed." I'm like, he's perfectly fine where he is. He's getting TV time.
Yeah.
He's gonna have a job for as long as he wants it. And and he's good. And that's the thing that sometimes people don't fully understand. It's like I always used to joke Zack Ryder had the best career for the longest time.
Yeah.
He loved what he was doing, he was getting paid. You're making good money at that point, and you know, right, and get all the royalty checks from the video games and toys and all the other stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, Robert, you got to go.
Oh shit,
your Valentine's Day. I got to pee because I'm about to piss in my pants. Which, by the way, my listeners know I've done before. dude, you got to come back. We got to just talk more. I got your number. I'm always down to talk wrestling. But dude, so I mean, I want to make sure you get your proper plug in. So is Wrestle Roast now, is it going now? It's totally changed now, or is there
So by the time that you're listening to this, the Twitter account's already changed over to Wrestle Roasts. There's an S at the end. Our debut episode of the new show comes out this Thursday.
Right.
We're roasting Shane McMahon, so that's going to be fun. You know, give it a listen. The archive of Total F and Marks, if you Google, I think if you look on Spotify and type in Wrestle Roast, all the Total F Marks episodes that come on there, I think you'll like it. Arquette interview is dropping. This is Monday, so it's dropping today. So I'll be tweeting it out during Raw. Follow me on Twitter at @WWCreative_ISH. I have a pro wrestling tees store. If you want to get some goofy wrestling shirts, now that I'm working at home, it's 80% of my wardrobe is just my wrestling shirts. Cause they're really comfortable.
Me too. Awesome, dude. That's dope. All right, dude, Robert, thank you for stopping by, man. It's a good fucking time.
Thank you for having me.
Yo, do you think I need to cut? This is my last thing. You think I need to cut that stuff I talk about me interviewing at WME? Did I say anything that's going to fucking, they're never going to hire me?
What do you think? They have like spies out there that are listening to the podcasts? They're like, there's somebody sitting there like taking notes and like, "Did you hear what that one damn black guy said on that podcast?"
Yeah. I was talking to one friend who interviewed for WME and they were like, before I went, I paused my social media and stuff so they wouldn't see I'm a huge mark. I was like, I didn't do any of that. I posted me front row at Raw the night before yelling at Randy Orton's face.
they don't know. They're not sitting there scouring the internet for podcasts and being like, "Oh, this guy's on the he's on the ban list now for it."
They probably should. Anyway, Robert, dude, thanks for coming by. Have a happy Valentine's Day and dude, cheers up. See you, bro.